Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. Remember that you can support the Father's Day by becoming a member there on the YouTube channel or jesseleepeterson.locals.com. And check out my coffee. I have my own coffee now, Parchee's Coffee. Go to jesseleepeterson.shop. It is so good. It makes you want to holler. I have with me Curtis Hill. He is a lawyer, speaker, author, consultant, and served as the 43rd Attorney General of the state of Indiana. Curtis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. So, Attorney General, what is the function of an Attorney General?
The Attorney General for the state is the chief legal officer for the state, handling cases of lawsuits against the state, bringing actions on behalf of the state, defending prosecutors in the criminal prosecutions, making sure that the appeals are handled correctly. In the state of Indiana, we had an office that had about 400 individuals in it and about 150 lawyers. So we handle all of the legal matters on behalf of the state of Indiana.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is.
Was it a difficult job for you?
It was a very rewarding job. I wouldn't say it was difficult. It was a handful. I had previously been a prosecutor, elected four times in the state of Indiana, northern Indiana, and I found the job exhilarating. It was a great opportunity to move around the state, talking about policy, but also talking about what was going on with the particular neighbors. It gave me great access to a lot of information, so I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I think I read that you are a Republican, right, or conservative?
Yes, sir. Yes,
and
sir.
Is it true that you're a lifetime member of the NAACP or something?
I am a lifetime member of the NAACP, and I'll tell you, my father was the local branch president of the NAACP in the 1950s and 1960s for about 12 years.
Wow.
So I was a member of the NAACP at birth. I still have the little cards, and several years ago, I committed to being a life member years ago. My father was the first life member in our county here in Indiana. I maintain that out of respect for the legacy of the NAACP, of what they meant in 1909 and for the advances that went through the Jim Crow era in particular. I'm not particularly aligned with the NAACP's movements today. I think that the NAACP has abandoned its objectivity and gone under the side of the left politics,
yeah,
which I think is contrary to the idea of advancing the cause of Black America. I'd like them to be more independent minded and really speak to issues impacting all Black Americans and not just those on the left.
And so can you give me a quick example of where they were before? Imagine you said 1909?
Well, 1909 was when the organization was founded, and it was founded as a result of genuine racial discrimination and activities, lynchings. There was the Springfield violence in Springfield, Illinois. That was one of the direct results of it. So this group of individuals that made up the NAACP, both Black and white, organized to actually fight voter suppression, against the the voter suppression, the lynchings, the everything that was going on with respect to Blacks in the 20s, 30s, 40s, on up to the desegregation of the school systems and the Brown versus Board of Education. There was great work that was done by the NAACP until they decided to become political.
And so what changed? Why would they go, if they were all that then, why would they go from good to bad?
Well, I think that they lost their way in the sense that they felt that the Democrat Party was the way to go for getting the community things instead of focusing on freedom, focusing on this concept of big government.
Okay.
The government was the answer for all issues, and really losing sight of the concept of personal responsibility losing sight of what was really going on in the black community, what was really going on with crime and other issues, taking their eye off the ball and becoming a political organization. You know, the black community used to be against abortion.
Right.
And yet we see the NAACP and other organizations that would embrace the concept of abortion, notwithstanding that abortion had an incredibly detrimental impact on black America.
Yeah. And so were you a Democrat at one time?
No, I was. I've always been a Republican. I came of age politically just before Ronald Reagan was elected president. I graduated from high school in 1979. Reagan was elected in 1980. So from a political standpoint, I experienced Jimmy Carter. And I've always said that we got Ronald Reagan because we had Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter yeah. was such an abysmal failure as a president. Nice man. But he really sunk the country into a low depression. And Ronald Reagan came along and it was morning in America. And I was a young 18-year-old in my first election. And that resonated with me.
Oh, okay.
And although I wasn't overly political over the course of the next 10 years, there was something about the Reagan-esque era that stuck with me through my 20s and 30s.
Do the NAACP, do they know that you are a member?
I'm not sure if all the members know. I've been invited to speak to some NAACP functions, and I remember one in particular. I was a keynote speaker, and I spoke for about 25-30 minutes, and half the room loved it, and half the room were chasing me out.
Yeah.
And I think what was happening was I was speaking what I believe is truth
yeah.
in terms of, you know, there's issues like mass incarceration and what's why the black community is in the condition that it's in. And I would talk about the problem with fatherhood. I would talk about the issues of crime, black on black crime and what it's done. I would talk about the positions that are being taken that were hurting and harming blacks. And there are some people, whether it's in the NAACP or in the black community, who don't want to hear that. And that's unfortunate because we really need to embrace the truth in order to move forward.
Absolutely. Were you born and raised in Indiana?
Yes, I was born in Elkhart, Indiana, which is about 100 miles east of Chicago, right on the Michigan line.
Okay.
The fifth of five children, had a very strong father. Very strong mother and a great upbringing.
Right on. I lived in Gary, Indiana for a while.
Ah.
And I saw it change overnight once they elected the first black mayor of the
Richard
city.
Hatcher.
Yeah. It changed overnight. Are you surprised? I don't know where you live there now, but are you surprised how bad things are or became in Indiana?
Well, it depends on where you are. For example, Gary is abysmal. It's just awful there. And that's been a problem, as you pointed out, going back to the 60s.
Yeah.
Poor leadership. They really take their marching orders from Chicago. And so go figure. The rest of Indiana is different. There are some pockets of Indiana that are not doing well. But for the most part, it's a robust rural environment, strong families, strong industry. So I think there are pockets of negative, like in Gary, but the rest of Indiana is pretty solid.
What's wrong with the blacks?
Well, I don't. What's wrong with the blacks is an interesting question. I can't say that it's all blacks.
Right, not all, but most.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is allowing oneself to fall into the trap of believing some of these so-called black looters and the route that has moved forward. Listening to people who, again, talk about what the role of government is and what we can do for you, and losing sight of the fact that much of the problems that we have in our nation, let alone in our black community, has to do with the fact that we have a breakdown in the family structure.
Yeah.
We can talk about a lot of things. We can throw a lot of solutions at the board. But if we don't solve the issue of having families intact, mothers and fathers raising children, that's the biggest problem that we have. back in the early 60s, you had about 25% of the homes that were fatherless, which is a high enough number. Today, you're up closer to 75%.
Yeah.
That's just not solid for a community when you're trying to bring up young men and you have no male influence to show them the way.
Yeah. When I was growing up, I didn't see black being so violent to want one another and others. I grew up in Alabama, and I don't even remember blacks fighting each other and all this stuff. But now, but most are so violent now that even other civilized blacks are afraid to be around blacks. Will that ever change, or will it get worse?
Well, if we don't address it, it will get worse. I mean, there's a couple numbers that really point to it. I mean, 13% of the country is black. And so a lot of people think that, well, that means that 13% of everything that we do ought to be black. So 13% of the prison population ought to be black. Well, it's not.
All right.
The prison population is about 38% black. So right there, people say, well, that's a clear demonstration that there's discrimination in our criminal justice system because we've got 13% of blacks and the prison population is 38%. But let's keep going, Jesse, because 50% of the murder victims in this country are black. 13% of the population, but 50% of the murder victims. Man. And the most disturbing statistic is that 90% of the people who killed the 50% are black.
Amazing. Wow.
13% of the country is black, but the vast majority of murder victims and murderers are overwhelmingly black. We've got to do something about that. We've got to examine why that's occurring, where that anger is coming from, where that distance is coming from, and fill those gaps.
And so I don't see that changing anytime soon, do you?
Well, I hope it does. I mean, I don't want to be so pessimistic. There are things in place that are moving in the right direction. There are organizations like the Douglas Leadership Institute, like the National Center for Public Policy Research that focus on identifying positive things that can move towards improving the family and improving the quality. But there's also a lot that's going wrong. You go into any urban area that has a black Democrat mayor. And you see lots of problems in that community. I don't know if it's because they're, I don't want to say it's because they're black. I don't want to say it's because they're Democrat. But a fact is many of these big city municipalities are not doing well, and they're being led by leftist leadership.
Right. Was it a mistake to have forced integration rather than segregation the way it was and let people come together no matter what race, but come together naturally rather than forcing it?
Sure. Jesse, I don't think it was a mistake to push for integration back in the 50s and 60s. I think the result was surprising and the result has been mixed. But in terms of doing something going forward, I'm a states' rights guy. But the practical reality is that in the 1930s, the 1940s, the 1950s, the southern states were not going to be fair to blacks. They were openly discriminatory. It wasn't going to happen. And so no one can really blame the federal government for stepping in, even though it's contrary to our founding, stepping in and correcting that behavior. But having said that, as necessary as it was, we've been paying a price ever since.
Yeah.
Because the price of going in with the federal engagement is it opened the door for federal engagement in other areas. And what we've seen from a social justice agenda standpoint is organizations and groups attaching themselves to black civil rights and therefore protecting or insulating themselves from harm. So you'll see the transgender movement, for example, will attach itself to black civil rights because, who's going to be against black civil rights? Let's hitch our wagon up to that star. That's what was not seen back in the 50s and 60s when integration was coming along. It was sort of believed that if we put people together, they will naturally grow closer together. And to a great degree, that happened. It happened, and it developed fairly well. And there's still a lots of signs of that success. But as I say, there have been some repercussions as a result of that, and we're still seeing the signs of that as well.
But had they not forced the integration, I think that America would have come together naturally, and it would have been based on character and not color. And because growing up in Alabama, under the Jim Crow laws and everything, I noticed that Black people were doing their thing, white people were doing their thing, but those that wanted to come together, Black and white, they did it naturally. It was based on principle. But once they forced it, because you can't force people to love you, then once they forced, then the fight started at that time, and it has never ended. It's only gotten worse.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jesse. That is a problem. I don't fault the people back in the day for you say forcing. I say pushing towards integration. Integration was seemingly the right way to go. Actually, was the right way to go for many, but it has had a particularly lingering problem, and particularly with legal structures. The protected class has been a problem moving forward, because what started off as let's protect Blacks because they have been mistreated and for decades and decades, to let's protect this group and let's protect this group and let's protect this group. And all pretty right. soon, you're so busy protecting these special groups that everybody's getting special treatment. Yeah. And if everybody's getting special treatment, nobody's getting special treatment. So we took the magic out of the solution, so that the whole idea of having a protected class means nothing today. So one of the things that I advocate is that we do away with the protected class all across the board and go back to a simple market analysis that you live where you want to live, you shop where you want to shop, you choose who you want to associate with and who not, and the market will dictate whether or not that's successful for you.
The Blacks didn't know that they needed protection. They didn't know that they were victims prior to the so-called civil rights movement, which was the worst thing, other than abortion, was the worst thing that ever happened to the Blacks. When Martin Luther King Jr. came along and Jesse Jackson, all those guys, they came along because they wanted power and control over the people. They're the one that told them that they are victims. Blacks didn't know that beforehand. They got up with the word. That whatever they were doing, they did what they had to do, and they didn't feel like victims until they were told that they were victims and that they needed Black leaders to protect them. And then, so the Blacks believed that. So then, once they believed the lie, they said, okay, here's some welfare money. We're going to give you a free government. We want you to be Democrats and vote for us. Because I remember down in Alabama, the older Black people, for the most part, did not agree with the so-called civil rights movement. And they would tell us, don't get involved in that mess with Martin Luther King and all those people. They just want to control you. And it turned out to be true. It was all about control and not because Blacks saw themselves as victims.
Well, I'll tell you, I take my lead from my father. My father, as a young man, and I never saw him exercising any kind of a concept of being a victim,
right?
You know, never. He was a strong man. He was the first postman in our community. My father was the first Black family to move into the white neighborhood. Yeah. He didn't do it to make a statement. He did because he got a good deal of property. I'll tell you a quick story there. He bought this land in a white neighborhood, and the neighbors got together and took up a collection and called him to a meeting, and told him they were going to buy him out. He wasn't welcome. His family wasn't welcome. And my father decided he was going to build his house right there. That was the house that several years later I was born into. We lived in that neighborhood. My father led in the civil rights agenda or arena in our local community, but not from the standpoint that you see today. It was a matter of identifying what the constitutional protections were and who they were available for, and making sure that people in the Black community understood what their protections were from the Constitution, not from individuals, but the Constitution, and what their rights were. I think that's the way to go. Our freedom comes from our founding documents, even though there were some snags in the beginning. Those documents talk about equal protection under the law. I think it's important to maintain that. There's a difference, though, between equal protection and equitable preference. It's not a matter of putting you ahead of someone else. It's a matter of recognizing that you're equal and free to do what you want to do. I'm free to succeed. I'm free to fail. Yeah. My freedom is a complete 100% the way I want it to be until it interferes with your freedom. And that's the only reason that we have laws in place to allow us to adjust our freedoms so that my freedom doesn't interfere with your freedom.
Right. When I become president, I'm bringing back segregation. Because what I notice about it, it has not worked. It doesn't work anywhere in the world. Because right. Now we have all these illegals. We have people from around the world in our country. And nobody gets along. They all fight with one another. Even the blacks, not all, but the Black American fight with the Black foreigners that come here. They say, you think you're better than we are. You act like the white man. You're independent. And the Mexicans and the Japanese, everybody moving to their own areas, and then they fight. So integration doesn't work. We need to bring back segregation and let people decide. What do you think?
Well, I would disagree. I wouldn't so-called bring back segregation. I think one of the problems that we have right now is a level of multiculturalism that's really negatively impacting us. We need people to assimilate. When people immigrate to this country, hopefully legally and rightfully, we need them to assimilate into our American culture. We're getting away from that. We're getting people who come into this country, want to stay, and don't want to assimilate or take a position that they hate the country, that they yeah. hate the republic, and they shouldn't be here if that's the case. So I don't think that segregation is the answer. I think that freedom is the answer. I think that one should be free to engage with who they want to engage, and likewise. I'll tell you, we actually had things going pretty well in this country until the Obama presidency. Yeah. And the Obama presidency, if you recall, everybody was excited because we thought, well, Obama being president, whether you were for him or against him, we just took a big bite out of racism in America. We now entered a post-race era.
Yeah,
that's what we thought. But in actuality, it magnified the problems with race more so than they had been done in the previous 20 to 30 years.
Absolutely.
And so you had a Black president who then spoke out on the Trayvon Martin issue and kind of made it personal. And that was sort of mishandled.
Yeah.
You had the Ferguson situation and the Obama administration's handling of that, notwithstanding that Michael Brown, the whole hands up thing didn't happen. And it was proven that it didn't happen. Nobody wanted to hear that. That became fertile ground for creating this victimhood aspect that we've been dealing with ever since. And that backlash from the Obama presidency actually created and provided the fertile ground for Trump's rise.
Yeah.
Because Trump represents a sense of nationalism, a sense of America first, American exceptionalism that said, we're tired of being told that we suck, that we're bad, that we're evil, that we're awful. Yeah. We want somebody that understands that we are a great nation, that we've done great things in this nation, that we've done great things around the world, that we will continue to do great things around the world. And we should be proud and pleased to live in this country and push that agenda. That's what we're seeing right now. And now you've got this friction between this multiculturalism socialist agenda and nationalism. And it's a real dogfight. I mean, it's a real civil war that we have. And we have to, I think we have to get a hold of that and win that war or we're going to have some real problems.
What do you think about the genocide that's happened against white people in America? They're being robbed, raped, knocked down in the streets, and murdered, necks being stabbed on the train and everywhere. What do you think about the genocide upon white Americans?
I think that there's a level of violence in America that is incredible. I think that level of violence is across the spectrum. I don't see a particular level of violence specifically geared at white America per se. I think there are sufficient examples of all stripes of people that are being brutally victimized on a regular basis. And that's really one of the unfortunate problems that we have, a society that's so brutal and so callous yeah. in its treatment of its fellow man.
Yeah.
But I think that it's across the board. I think that you can I wouldn't label it as a on the basis of race per se, as much as it is that there's a violence, a lack of empathy towards your fellow man.
But it tends to be happening to the whites more. And you're right, black on black violence out of control, but black on white violence, black on white violence. And now you have the Allahu Akbar people here, the Muslim, they are against the whites. You have the Somalians and others, they are against the whites. And it reminds me of what's happening in Europe, how the white people can barely function there now because their government won't protect them, the citizen. Same thing happened in South Africa. It has now happened in America against the white, but most people don't seem to either don't know it or they're afraid to speak up about it. How would that change if white people don't say no to this and other people don't stop it? Because it really is happening. We report on it all the time. It's truly happening to white people from all sides now.
I don't think it's a white issue. I think it's a culture issue. I think there's a violence against American culture. The numbers of white individuals is a majority in the communities, so it may have the appearance of that. But I think it's a cultural issue. People are opposing and fighting and violent against the culture that we have, the culture of Christians, the culture of conservatives. The culture of those who have a strong belief in American history, American freedom. That's not a white thing. That is it's an American culture thing that may get confused with being a white thing. I don't look at our culture in America as a white culture. I look at it as American culture, and American culture is under attack. It may manifest itself amongst people differently or even the same, but that manifestation is against the culture of what it means to be a free American. I think there's also a problem with people who don't like Christians or people who profess their Christianity. I certainly believe that America is I don't hold out that America is a so-called Christian nation in the sense that the legal founding, we're not a theocracy. We weren't created as a Christian nation, although we were created and founded by those who were heavily influenced by Christianity.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I personally want to see America be a Christian nation in terms of deeds to love thy neighbor, love God, do the types of things that Jesus would do to a neighbor. That is what we're missing as a nation, that effort to be a Christian nation indeed. And rolling that on to the importance of our American freedom.
I don't know if that's going to ever happen again, because now they have the Allahu Akbar people here, the Muslims in our country, and they see us as the big Satan, and they see Israel as a little station, small station, and they're outwardly chanting death to America, death to Israel, free Palestine, and all that. They're waving the enemy flags, the Muslim flags, and things like that. And so I don't ever see us coming back as a Christian nation anymore. Do you?
Well, that's the problem with the lack of assimilation. We've allowed, it's sort of a freedom paradox, Jesse. We have freedom of religion, and freedom of association. We have freedom of movement. And many of these groups and organizations have taken advantage of that freedom to do us harm. That's a very real problem. Our solutions, well, we could block these people from coming in. Will that be the answer? Look at the case that was resolved by the Supreme Court today, the birthright citizen case, birthright citizenship. That's a perfect example. By allowing anybody who's here on a weekend to have a baby that's a citizen, opens us up to a very dangerous future. It was already happening. I don't want to suggest that this is like something that's all brand new. For years and years and years, people are coming into this country, some not necessarily with an agenda, but you can bet your bottom dollar that there are others that do have an agenda to become that Manchurian candidate, to get that camel's nose under the tent, to have people here as operatives to take over America, not with guns and bombs, but through politics and numbers. And that's a real, real problem that we're going to have to figure out how to move forward. Maybe not over the next 10 years, but in the next 20, 30, 40 years, we're going to see some real problems politically if we don't get a handle on how to address this multiculturalism, anti-American effort.
And now that the Supreme Court has said, yes, you should just come here and drop a baby and you're a citizen, and knowing how much they hate us, they're going to raise their children to hate America too and blame them for racism and things like that. And we now have people like Mondami in New York as mayor of the country, of the state. You have other socialist communist people in New York that are winning. And the socialism communism thing is being promoted. I don't know how that's going to change, since in the universities, they're educating young people to think that way. And once you have a mindset like that, it's difficult to know the truth. I don't see how change is going to come for the good.
It you raise a very strong point. It is occurring. Our universities have become so liberalized and anti-American, and that's where young people are getting a lot of their information. They haven't had to face the real problem of sacrifice. You know, I had friends that were a generation or two older than me that lived through the Great Depression, that lived through World War II. These were people who actually experienced the idea that maybe America wouldn't survive. Maybe Germany or Japan would win World War II. See, in our generation, we just take it for granted. We won, we'll never lose. And so we don't have that same sense of sacrifice. This generation of kids now, they've had it on Easy Street. And so they don't know what the true value system is. They don't know what it really means to be an American. And this continued hatred towards America is a problem. Now, what's going to happen, what has to happen, is we have to have leadership at both at the national level and in our local states that speak the truth and resonate that positive message. The truth is right in front of people if they want to see it. And what we have to find are people who have the ability to unlock that vision and communicate that to other people. We don't necessarily have to get them all, but we have to get enough to withstand the tide.
Hi, I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. 2026 marks 250 years of America, and they have put my face on this beautiful silver coin to commemorate this occasion. That's amazing. Call 800-411-2663. That's 800-411-BOND. Grab yours now before they are gone. Another thing I was surprised by and never thought that I would see is that the president sent ICE out there to collect these illegals and send them back. And then you have American citizens going out and protesting ICE, trying desperately to stop them, supporting the other foreigners that were here illegal. And they don't realize that they are supporting their own destruction by trying to stop the government from protecting the citizens.
Yes.
And that's due to the education, too. Am I right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The immigration problem, particularly caused over the course of the Biden administration, is phenomenal. the numbers of people who were allowed to come in here unencumbered. And it's important to note that not all of the people who come here illegally are criminals or mean us harm. There are some people who just figure out, I mean, if I didn't live in America, I'd do what I could to get here too. It's a great place to live and I'd want to be here, but I'd want to be here and become an American.
Right.
I think that we have to get a hold of this immigration process, and the president's first step in securing the border. Absolutely. That had to be done. You can't fix the immigration system at the front door while you have your back door swinging wide open.
Right.
So close that back door so that we can focus on creating rules for orderly immigration. There's nothing wrong with bringing people in from other countries that fit a bill. But one of the things we have to do now that we didn't have to do back in the 1800s when we had free immigration is we have to identify the ideologues. We have to identify people who want to come to this country for ill purposes, and we have to protect and defend Americans from those folks. That's a harsh thing to say, but the reality is we have to do it because there are people in this world, for whatever reason, who hate America.
Yeah.
And they want to see America's demise. And if we don't get serious about understanding where that hatred comes from and how to deal with it, we are going to have hell to pay.
And so even those that came illegally, they did break the law to come. And so they are lawbreakers because they came illegally. Shouldn't we ship them all back, whether they have committed other laws after getting here, but ship them all back because they are lawbreakers. So, and then in 100 years from now, open up the front door. And if we need some more, let them in the right way. Shouldn't we ship them all back since they all are criminals for breaking the law?
Theoretically, one might say, well, we need to ship them all back because they're here illegally. As a practical matter, Jesse, we have to think about this differently because no matter how many numbers, I've often heard 11 million, it's probably more like 20 or 30 million, how many ever millions that are here, here's a practical reality. We don't have the resources to identify all of them or to actually remove most of it. We just don't have it. So recognizing that, what we have to do is understand who do we want out first. We need to identify the ones that are absolute criminals, that either criminals when they came or they're committing crimes here, and put them in a category. That category says you leave now. That's got to be our priority. This other group of people who are here illegally, they don't belong here, but if they have assimilated, if they're working, if they're productive, if they're family oriented, and we can't take everybody out, then we need to make sure that the ones that we kick out are the ones that are causing us harm, and we find some other mechanism for the ones who we can't get everybody out, but we've identified as less harmful than others.
Amazing. In New York, it has been reported that one of the reasons that Mamdani won is that the white, liberal, educated women voted for him. And was it a mistake to allow women the right to vote?
No, absolutely not. It was a shame that it took as long as it did because women are just as capable at making determinations of their own interests from a political standpoint as men. I don't think that's the case at all. The mistake is that we have a system that has become attractive to particular individuals that lose their minds on what America is all about. It's not that the person is the problem. It's the person's way of thinking and how they've been educated or how they've educated themselves and what's important. We've got people out there who in our liberal universities that are just anti-America. They don't get the truth of what occurred. They think that the government holds the keys and the solutions to fixing everything. What you see in New York, it's unbelievable that the mayor of New York was elected. Now he's got colleagues that just have open hostility to the American society, and yet they're being successful. Yeah. That's what's incredible. Not that these people exist with these really weird thoughts, but that there's actually enough people who buy into that to get them elected into office. We're going to see more of that before we see less. We're going to see more of that, particularly in your larger urban areas where the discontent manages itself. But the what happens in these things, Jesse, is this. It's like a pendulum. Things swing to the left and they swing to the right. And the good news for those of us who consider ourselves, like myself, conservative, is that when the pendulum swings to the left, it swings a hell of a lot harder than than the middle wants it to.
That's for sure.
And that's why we've got hope, because they always bite too much. They always go too, if they would back off and just go a little bit, because the middle is where the country's at. And we play the extremes. If they would just play to the middle a little bit, we'd have a problem, but they go all the way. When you pit biological women against transgender women or biological men, and you say that they're equal, well, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
but there's no truth in that.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do, is we have to make sure that we break down our common truths and educate people in terms of what's important, what truth is, and then fight for that truth.
In the good old days when boys were boys and men were men, men and women knew that women were emotional and that they did not know how to think clearly straight, you know, because all their decisions were based on how they thought and feel, and they will always make the wrong decision. That's why women can't raise children without a man, because the father is there to protect the children from the illogical mother. And so they knew in those days that women should not vote. They should not lead, because they did not have the mentality and the state of logic, thoughts, and emotion to do it. What has changed? It's the same thing now.
Well, I believe very strongly in the traditional family. And the traditional family contemplates the male head of the household, the hunter-gatherer, if you will, and mother as the nurturer. There are roles that are tied to our genders that are very important. Having said that, while I think it's ideal to have a father and a mother, I don't want to discount that both men and women have the capacity to make adjustments and the right adjustments that they need to raise their family. We've all seen examples of single parents that have done well. It's not optimal. So I don't want to say that automatically that a woman can't raise a boy. I think she absolutely can. And I think there's examples of women who've done a fine job of raising young men. But I would say that the odds of raising young boys that are going to move in a positive direction is stronger when you have a male figure to lead that course. So I do think that women and men have they're different. Thank God for that. But I think from an intellectual standpoint, I don't have any issues with women being absolutely as or the equal of men from an intellectual standpoint and from a leadership capacity. I think if a woman politician makes a mistake, she makes a mistake because she's stupid or she got bad information, but not because she was inherently a woman.
No, it's because she's illogical. If you notice that all families, all of them, where when the father's not there, or if he's there, he's not keeping an eye on his children, the boys and the girls, that the mother tend to cause them to become angry, emotional. They become like what they hate, because they hate that nature of the mother, which is not of love, is always of anger. And because the father's not paying attention or he's not around to protect the children, women are incapable of logically raising children without the father. And the kids all end up becoming like what they resent. They resent their mothers, and the boys and the girls become like her, emotional, angry. They have fear and doubt. They overreact to the situation because they become like their mothers. But in the good old days when father were around to protect the children from the mother, then the kids, boys and the girls, tend to be a little more logical than they were if they didn't have a father protection. Have you noticed that?
I don't notice that. I think that, as I say, it's far better from an odd standpoint of having a mother and a father having their respective traditional roles. But I don't subscribe to the proposition that women automatically cannot parent a child by themselves.
It's not in the nature. Look what happened to the black kids. When they had father, they were normal. And then when the father left and the mother was there to raise them alone, they became crazy because they became like the mothers. So they end up hating their mothers, the boys and the girls. And instead of going back and forgiving the mothers for what they have done to them, imposing their will on them, and forgiving the father for not protecting them from the mother, they go out into the world, and the world tells them it's racism, it's a white man, it's this
and
that.
But I think that has more to do with the pressures of single parenting than it does racial parenting. I think you can see that with single parents. I mean, the single parent phenomena is alive and well in the white community as well.
Right, but the white kids are screwed up now because of that.
Yes. So it's the single parent issue as opposed to the black single parent or the white single parent. A single parent has a disadvantage. I'll give you my example. I've been married to Teresa for 32 years. We've got 5 children. Everything's wonderful. And it's tough to raise kids, even when things are going well, because of the demands on your life professionally, the demands that the kids have. It's unimaginable to me the difficulties that a single parent has in raising children, even if they're very capable of raising children. It just becomes a disadvantage. So one of the things that we have to do as a society, we have to encourage traditional marriage, traditional relationships, but traditional marriage, not this shacking up and living together,
right,
but actually commitments of husbands and wives going through the process of raising a family and raising children and providing those children with that example of what it means to lead a family.
But in the good old days, they knew that women psychologically and emotionally could not raise children, right? And so whenever there was a separation of the father and the mother or however it happened, the children would go with the father because they knew that the father would raise the children in the right way instead of the mothers. And so
who's the they? Who's the they?
The country.
Okay.
The family, you know, the country, the children have to go with the father, not the mother, because the father had the love and the mother didn't have love. She only had hate.
And I didn't experience that. When I used to practice law, I did family law and had cases that we handled in divorce court. And my experience was that most of the cases, certainly much more than 50%, most of the divisions were the mother raising the children and the dad's getting weekends. And it was provided, it had more to do with the nurturing aspect of mothers and the breadwinner aspect of fathers. Now, that was generally speaking. I can't say that happened all the time. But I did not see or experience a lot of situations where the kids got to choose, number one. That typically they didn't choose. The judges would choose.
Unfortunately.
But if they chose, they didn't necessarily choose the father because the father was out catting around. So I don't see it the way you do in that particular instance.
Well, the reason they didn't choose the father because the mother made kids think that their father was a bad guy and he is no good, he out messing around. The mother don't tell the children, you know what, your father love you. He's not here because I ran him off. He couldn't deal with the hell in me, but he loved you guys. So they make the children think that the father's a bad guy when it's really them.
You might be able to say that in a particular instance or a series of incidents, but you can't make that statement. That's just not an accurate, broad statement that applies to everyone.
And why not?
There could be examples because people are different. There's no sociological basis to suggest that what you described is consistent across an entire race or across an entire sex.
It's across the whole world.
What's that?
It's like that around the world. I counsel with men and women around the world, and whenever that father is not leading that woman in the right way, protecting his children, the kids always, the boys and the girls, always end up emotional, screwed up, overreacting to life, acting just like what they hate, their mothers. It's everywhere. Because let me ask, were women created to lead or to follow?
Well, biblically, man was given dominion over the earth, and Eve was given to the man. That's the biblical standard. Keeping in mind that we're not a theocracy, we're a nation that's designed to be everyone equal. And in my estimation, that includes women.
Women created to lead or to follow by God?
By God, women were directed to follow in that sense of the word.
Right. So unless we follow God's laws, nothing's going to work. And so to allow a woman to lead is going against the law of God. So it's destined to fail. It cannot work because she's not in her natural state of being. It's not going to ever work. It doesn't matter the color. You're right about that. But when you allow the woman to lead, then it's going to fail. It can't work because it's not in her nature, because it's not the order of God. Am I right?
I would agree that the nature of God is for the man to be the leader of the family,
right?
And the wife to be his helpmate,
right?
That being said, I think it's important that the relationship between the husband and the wife is also as one unit. They're two separate aspects of the same entity.
Right. She's subject to the husband as the husband is subject to God. But if she's not subject to the husband, it ain't going to work because she's going to be trying to be her own leader and all that mess. And that doesn't work because it goes against God's order.
And as Christians, that's certainly something that we can share with our friends and neighbors to encourage. But it's not a constitutional standard.
But if you follow the laws of God, you don't need the Constitution because your heart is going to be that of God. You're going to naturally do the right thing. You're not going to break the spiritual laws. And as a return, you're not going to break the physical laws of the land because you've put God's first. Would you ever follow a woman?
Would I ever what?
Follow a woman, obey a woman.
Well, in what sense? I obey my wife all the time.
You do? What now? Would you ever follow a woman?
Would I ever follow a woman in what sense? Are you saying work for a woman?
In a sense at all. I know if you work for her, you go to work and do your little job, but you're not following her then. But would you ever follow a woman?
Yes, I would follow if I would have no problem following someone who is an appropriate leader in my estimation of what it means to lead. So from my standpoint, I don't disregard a woman's leadership or abilities because she's a woman. If she's sharp, if she's smart, intelligent, has put in the homework just like any guy has done, they're worthy of being a leader, worthy of being followed.
But I don't understand why you being a man would follow a woman. Women don't even like following women. They don't like working for them because they know they're always bitchy and stuff, moody and lack of patience. So even women don't like working for women or follow them. Why would you follow one?
I have seen examples of that. I wouldn't say it's across the board, but I've seen enough examples that's a general statement that I've actually heard a lot of women actually say.
Yeah.
So that there is some accuracy in that, yes.
How do you deal with the hell in your wife when it comes out?
I pray.
You pray? And does praying help it?
We're at 32 years, so we're doing well so far.
Does she obey you?
Uh, She tolerates me. I'll put it that way.
What does that mean?
We have my wife's a very good woman. A
No
very
such
good.
thing.
What's that?
No such thing as a good woman.
Oh, absolutely. There absolutely are good women. My mother was a good woman. My wife's a good woman. My daughters are good women.
But God said no such thing.
Well, as a good person.
Right.
Well, in the aspect of there are people who do good things, because I do agree that we don't have good people or bad people. We have people who do things that, by our own perceptions, are better than others.
Amazing. Well, how can you do good things when you're a bad person?
I think people do. First of all, you have to determine what's good and bad, and who gets to make that judgment. People do things, and then by an objective standard, someone else decides whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. So I think you can have a person who's considered a jerk by most standards, but maybe they stop and do a kind thing to someone else. They can perform a good or positive task. But we do get caught up in the idea of who's good and who's bad, and that can be a little tricky because of the subjectivity that goes into who gets to make the call that's a good thing or a bad thing.
We don't have to make the call if we're walking in the light with God. You would know the bad person because they won't have love. They would be impatient. They would be angry. They would be stressed out, worried, doubt,
Which are
resentful,
which which are which are
controlling.
feelings that most of us struggle with on a daily basis? Yes.
I'm sorry?
I think I said which are feelings that most of us struggle with on a daily basis.
But you're a Christian, right?
Yes, sir.
Do you have perfect peace?
I do my best to walk with God as much as I can.
Right.
Um,
And do you
and
have perfect peace?
described as how?
I'm sorry?
What do you mean by perfect peace?
Do you have perfect peace where you just let life happen? You don't have to struggle. You have no problems, no worries, no emotions like that. Because emotions are of the devil and not of God. God is a dispassionate God, and Satan is a passionate small g God. And so any emotional person, whether angry, resentful, worried, stressed, jealousy, envy, strife, they're telling you right there that they're an evil person because they're not of God. And so they don't have peace. A person of perfect peace, which God came and gave us for us, we live in harmony with the world. We don't argue with them. We don't fight with them. We're not stressed. Life happened naturally. Why don't you have perfect peace?
I think that I do my best to walk as I'm supposed to walk. But life is a struggle.
But it shouldn't be a struggle for the children, the sons and daughters of God. It should not be a struggle. It's easy. His ways are easy. His life his ways are easy. His burdens are light. They are not struggles at all.
Well, I disagree. I mean, life hands you lots of things, and certainly the closer we walk with God, the better that we're able to handle those things. But we do face struggles. I think that's the nature of humankind. I think that's the I've talked to people who claim to be Christian, and yet they struggle.
Yeah, because they don't know God. They know about it, but they don't know him. Knowing about God is not knowing God. You just like knowing about Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King can't save you. You would never know God just by knowing about God. It's just knowledge, it's ideas. And you
Well,
got to get away from all that
you have
in
to
order
learn
to know
about
that.
God, and you have to do the best you can to understand God's plan for your life.
His plan is to create love through us on earth. But let me ask, you said you listened to the woman. God said because you listened to the woman, you're going to suffer. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. Which women?
the woman, period. Have you noticed that every time the man listens to the woman, whether it's his mother, his girlfriend, his wife, or the woman at work, he suffers because he listened to her?
I can't agree with that. I mean, it's very possible, and I don't dispute what you're saying in terms of the biblical standard. But from my own experience, I don't see that as a concern of mine, that listening to women in leadership or listening to women who have a point of view or a thought creates a particular problem for me.
So was God lying when you said that?
I don't know. Absolutely not.
But he said it, and it's true.
It would be true from a biblical standpoint, yes.
But from a God standpoint, is it true? Is it true from a God standpoint?
Well, that's when I say a biblical standpoint, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. That's amazing, huh? Let me ask one other quick question, and then I'll put you on the hot seat here. If you could have perfect peace, if you knew how to get perfect peace, would you accept it?
Would I what?
If you knew how to come into perfect peace, where the world cannot touch you, and you'll be right here on earth, living in paradise, would you accept it?
Well, I think that's what we're striving for. Yes.
If you knew how to get it, would you accept it?
Well, we know where to get perfect peace. Perfect peace is through the love of Jesus Christ. We know that. That's what we know. And attaining that are two different things.
So if you knew how to attain it, and I can tell you right now how to attain it, would you accept it and would you want it?
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
You got to forgive your mother. Your mother recreated you her image, and you forgot your identity, and you've taken on that identity that's in her, anger, fear, emotions. And that's why God said you must be born of the Father. And that's never going to happen until you go to your mother and forgive her for turning you away from the Father. And when you don't ask for forgiveness, you forgive her. Mother, I am sorry for resenting you. I realize now you couldn't help yourself. Her mother screwed her up and turned her away from her father. And don't ask for forgiveness. Forgive her and God will forgive you and give you perfect peace.
Well, I'll take that into consideration.
Yeah. It's going to blow you. Because right now you're married to your mother. That's why you can't handle your wife. You married your mama.
Who said I had? I can't handle my wife? What are you saying, Jesse?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
What? But forgive your mother. Let me know how that goes.
Well, my mother passed away 5 years ago, but forgiveness still is
right. Realize that you are angry. You resented her, but she couldn't help it. And you're wrong for resenting her. You didn't know as a kid, but now as an adult. God said when you forgive others, he will forgive you, and he will give you perfect love.
I love what you're saying, but I cannot agree that I owe my mother forgiveness for creating me the way she did. I understand what you're saying.
She couldn't help it.
What's that?
She couldn't help it because she resented her father. I resented her mother, and she yearned for her father.
You can't say that, Jesse, because you don't know my mother and our circumstances. I think you can make general statements that could be accurate with other people, but I don't subscribe to your thoughts as it relates to my mother and my relationship with my mom.
Well, I'm only repeating what God said. He said we are all born in sin, meaning that we were born to angry mothers, and they take away our innocence by making us angry and opposing their will, and then so we forget our natural identity, natural born identity, and we become like that. But when we become adults, we start to look for our way back home to the Father. And that's when we realize we got to forgive so God can forgive us, change our heart, and the rest is easy. But he said that about every human being, so I'm not making it up. There are no exceptions. All who are born from the woman must be born again of the Spirit of the Father. Did he say that?
I believe so.
Uh-huh. So listen, forgive your mama. Though she's dead, realize she did her best. She did do her best, but she couldn't help it. She was angry. She didn't overcome by forgiving her mother. And God will forgive you, and everything will change. But be warned, that your wife is not going to like the change in you because she won't be able to control you anymore. And that's when the real hell going to start for you. So be aware of that, all right?
I got your warning.
So I got to put you on the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible, all right?
All right.
The hot seat.
Are UFOs real?
I don't know.
Have you ever picked cotton?
No.
What is a woman?
A biological female.
What is a man?
A biological man, an adult man, adult male.
Do we need more white babies?
As opposed to what?
Do we need more white babies?
We need more Christian babies.
How about white ones?
I don't know.
True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
Who's she?
I'm sorry?
Who is she?
She, whenever she is crying, she's lying. True or false?
I can't answer that.
Is Earth flat or round?
It's round.
Sending your kids to the public school today is child abuse. True or false?
I might not go that far, but I would not send my kids to public school.
Yeah, I mean public school, yes. I said public, right? Public school. Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
F-A-T?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's right to call anyone a derogatory term, whether it's accurate or not.
Right on. What other quick I had? I forgot what it was. Oh. Is it ever okay for a man to surrender to a woman?
Surrender in what sense?
Let her lead him.
Yes.
It is? What the? Did you have fun?
With you?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, you're an interesting fellow. I can. That's for sure.
Amazing. Well, I appreciate you taking on the hot seat that way. I do appreciate it. Tell the folks how to get your website, your books, whatever it is you want to promote.
Well, I'm currently a senior advisor for the National Center for Public Policy Research. That's nationalcenter.org, where you can find information on us and what we're doing. I also got curtishill.com, where you can look at some of my writings and submit questions or requests for me to appear.
Right on. I forgot to ask in my quick question, do you love white people?
I love all people.
How about white people? Do you love white people?
I love some white people.
You don't love all?
There's some I love some black people. I love some brown people. As my dad said, I love some polka dotted people.
Amazing. Again, I really appreciate you coming on the show. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to check out the merch at DestinyPeterson.shop, right? DestinyPeterson.shop, my coffee, everything is there. And if you'd like to see other interesting guests on the show, contact my producer, producer@thefallenstate.tv. And support us by becoming a member on the YouTube channel or DestinyPeterson.locals.com. It's amazing. And I do shout outs for you. Shout out. Go to Cameo. Birthday shout outs, wedding, anniversary, congratulations, whatever the shout out is. Go to cameo.com/DestinyPeterson or shoutout.fans/DestinyPeterson. Thank you again for coming on. That was amazing. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
All right, buddy.